Good evening, and welcome to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Deborah Becker. Tonight, we have a forum on the environment and a new green economy featuring the four Massachusetts Democratic candidates running for the U.S. Senate seat of the late Ted Kennedy. The forum is co-sponsored by the Environmental League of Massachusetts, the Conservation Law Foundation, Mass Audubon, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Sierra Club Massachusetts Chapter, Clean Water Action, Environment Mass, the Trustees of Reservations, and the Mass League of Environmental Voters. Here now to introduce the candidates and our panelists is tonight's moderator, New England Cable News host Jim Browdy.
There will be 1 minute openings from each of the candidates. And they drew lots, or reasonable facsimile thereof, in a minute, and I'll tell you what the order is in a second. 1 minute closings as well, and they drew lots for that, too. In between, every candidate will get their own question from one of the three panelists, who I'll introduce in a second, and be allowed a 90-second response. The other three candidates will get 30 seconds to reply, should they choose to take it. The moderator, that would be me, may allow panelists a follow-up question or something that makes sense. If the conversation is moving, candidates will be given a 15-second warning. You can hold the thing up so they see what it looks like. And a stop sign, which looks like a stop sign, when time expires. Let me introduce the panelists if I can. First, Beth Daly is an environmental reporter for the Boston Globe. Hi, Beth. Sasha Pfeiffer is a science and health reporter for WBUR-FM. Hello, Sasha. And Sydney Lupkin is a Boston University senior and former editor of the Daily Free Press. Welcome to all three of you, and thanks for being here. Introduction of candidates. And by the way, you're not supposed to applaud here, but to remove the tension from the room, feel free to applaud, and then we'll get moving. Michael Capuano is the former mayor of Somerville, is now in his sixth term in the U.S. Congress, representing Somerville, Cambridge, and the city of Boston. Congressman Capuano. Thank you. Martha Coakley. Martha Coakley was twice elected district attorney for Middlesex County. In 2006, she was elected Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Attorney General Coakley.
Thank you.
Alan Casey was the co-founder of CityEar, a national public service organization, the model for AmeriCorps, and the founder of Be the Change, another public service nonprofit. Alan Casey. Thank you. And finally, Steve Pagliuca was the managing partner at Bain Capital, is a part owner of the Boston Celtics. He has chaired the board of Massachusetts Citizens for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. Steve Pagliuca, please. As I said, the candidates did draw lots as to who would give the opening statements. The order is Casey, Coakley, Pagliuca, and Capuano. Alan Casey, you have a minute.
Sure. Thank you, Jim, and thank you all of you for hosting this forum. I'm a committed environmentalist. I want my children and my grandchildren and all children to grow up with the great natural resources and beauty of our environment that I've had, and not fighting for their survival. In fact, when I first thought about getting into the race, my wife and I sat down with our 7-year-old daughter, Mirabel, and we said, Mirabel, honey, what do you think about Daddy running for Senator Kennedy's Senate seat? And she said, I think that's a great idea, because if, Daddy, you're a senator, you can help me get my gas-free, battery-powered scooter built. So I've got a 7-year-old environmentalist at home. As I said in my speech on Afghanistan yesterday, climate change is an environmental issue, an economic issue, an energy issue, and a national security issue because we keep going to wars in the Middle East. We're all strongly for getting this done, but I'm the only candidate in this race that isn't taking PAC or lobbyist money. I'm the only candidate who hasn't been a lobbyist or hired a lobbyist. I will be free from the special interest and will be able to get this done.
Thank you, Ellen Casey. Martha Coakley, please, 1 minute.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks, Dean, for hosting us here today. I was very proud to become the Attorney General of an office that had sued the Environmental Protection Agency, claiming that, of all things, they were supposed to protect the environment and, in fact, be successful in that argument. In addition to that, we worked since I came into office with California and other states on making sure that we would continue the fight against greenhouse gas emissions. I was called by Congressman Markey to come testify about the efforts we'd made on the state level on that. When I became Attorney General, I undertook several efforts to make sure that we work with the legislature on the Green Communities Act, not just passing it, but implementing it since then. We have worked across the Commonwealth on our brownfields initiatives to change the legislation and to get some changes done on that. I empowered our Environmental Crime Strike Force to go after those who criminally violated the environmental law. As vice chair of the region, as attorney general, we hosted a summit on environmental issues. And if you send me to the U.S. Senate, I will continue to make those issues forefront for what we need to do to combat climate change and other environmental issues.
Thank you, Martha. Coakley, Steve Pagliuca, 60 seconds, please.
Hi, thank you, Jim. It's great to be here. I'm a strong proponent for fighting for climate change and improving our environment. We use 100 quadrillion BTUs of energy here in the U.S. That's a big number. That would go around this room many, many times. That's 21% of the world's energy. We've got to get that down. And the shocking fact is 84% is fossil fuels, and about half of that is oil. So half of that fossil fuel emissions is from oil. Most of that is from foreign countries. It's an environmental issue. It's a strategic issue. And we've really got to end our dependence on fossil fuels and specifically oil. To do that, we've got to be more efficient. We've got to invest in technologies, and that relates into jobs. We have 320,000 people not employed here in Massachusetts. We're a leader in clean tech. We've really got to get the jobs back. This can be a win-win. Have a plan to get the carbon out of the air over the next 20 years. There can be 20 million jobs worldwide created in clean tech to solve this problem. So if you send me to the Senate, we'll have a clean environment and we'll have jobs.
Thank you, Steve Pagliuca. Michael Capuano.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for everybody for being here. To me, the environment is a real issue. It's not just a philosophical issue. As mayor, I'm proud of the fact that we created more open space in the most densely populated city in New England than ever before. Environmentalism is a great philosophy, but it doesn't mean anything unless you actually put it into action. We did a recycling program from start to finish, not just curbside recycling, but regional recycling for some of the most hazardous material in anyone's household. We hired and created the first municipal environmental protection officer in the Commonwealth. That's in the past. In the current, relative to Congress, I've also fought to turn the environmental movement into an urban environmental movement, urban and suburban. Trying to figure out, trying to get people to understand that, yes, 1 million acres in Colorado is important, but so is 10,000 square feet in Roxbury. You can't have one without the other unless you win the hearts and minds of the American people, and the way to do it is on a local basis. Cafe standards, easy to do. In 2005, before it was popular, I was one of the co-sponsors of a bill that that tried to move the cafe standards forward. I also have been very active in transportation-related environmental movements, and the word stop, I guess, is serious.
Thank you, Michael Capuano. Now on to round one. One more reminder, we'll do it on a rotating basis. The candidate who is asked the question first gets 90 seconds. The remaining three get 30 if they want it. If either the reporter, the inquisitor, the questioner, or the candidate feels they need extra time at the end, ask me and I will be kind. Beth Daly, you're first, to Michael Capuano.
Congressman, we'll start with a Wynn question first because it's we all know about Cape Wynn. But Ted Kennedy was deeply against placing a wind farm in Nantucket Sound. All of the candidates, including yourself, have indicated support for Cape Wynn. But the fact of the matter is that wind projects offshore and also on land in Massachusetts have been thwarted in large part because of local opposition, some by environmentalists, some by people who just don't like the aesthetics of the turbines. In fact, Massachusetts ranks 32nd, if not lower, in the country for wind power generated. Do you think the government should be given expanded power to overrule local opposition in citing renewable energy projects?
Not much. No, I don't. I believe that local authorities should have reasonable authority to control the quality of life. I mean, again, that's the idea about Nantucket Sound is it is not a local government issue. It is a state government issue. And I think that's one of the reasons that makes it a very appropriate place to put it. I don't believe that, but only because, honestly, I also believe in environmental justice. And by personal experience, it always ends up that the worst items, whatever they might be, not just windmills, always end up in the poorest areas. They never end up in the wealthiest areas. So for me, I think if you take away some local control, you are dooming the poorest people in our society, the ones with the least voice, to bear the brunt of the burden, whatever that burden is. I do believe that the burden should be spread out because the benefit is spread out. So for me, environmental justice requires some degree of local input. Should it be determinative and final? The answer is no, and it's not. There are ways to get around that. There are ways to deal with that. And I do believe that those issues are appropriate.
Thank you. Martha Coakley, 30 seconds if you want it.
I believe that we need both a centralized way to go forward on these ways to get alternative fuels. But I think the Local input's important. I think there are ways to streamline that so it doesn't take as long. And as we move forward on wind, I think we have to take into account the siting and the availability as we did in Cape Wind over a long period of time. And I think that there are ways to both move it forward with regional planning, ways to expedite it, but without sacrificing what we want to in terms of the environmental piece.
Thank you. Alan Casey, you have 30 as well.
My answer is yes. The federal government should have more power, and we should use our separation of powers, legislative oversight, and the ability to go to federal courts if there's real strong opposition. But this is a crisis. We have to deal with it. Cape Wind, which has been stalled for years and gone through approval after approval, will provide 75% of the electricity for the Cape and the islands. It's the equivalent of taking 175,000 cars off the road. We need to move aggressively on this, and Massachusetts can lead in clean energy.
Steve Pagliuca, 30.
I think you have to leave it with local control, but the process has to be streamlined. There should be guidelines put on how this is done, and you shouldn't be able to delay projects for 10 or 11 years through the courts. So there has to be some finite time frame, but in local control with federal pushing for that local control, but pushing for the time frames and shortening those time frames.
If there is a representative from the Guinness Book of World Records here, this is the first panel of candidates for any office in American history, none of whom used the allotted time to answer their question. Thank you, Sasha Pfeiffer, the Attorney General.
So, Attorney General Coakley, a question first for you on green jobs. So Governor Patrick, as you know, has been very vocal about wanting Massachusetts to be a renewable energy leader. And he's granted tens of millions of dollars in government aid to get green companies to locate here, including Evergreen Solar, including the battery maker A123. But both of those companies are now moving or building facilities out of state, and in Evergreen's case, China. What would you do to try to keep those jobs in Massachusetts?
A good question, and the one that not just in this instance I think we are facing. I think that, first of all, we need and can be the leader in the research and development. I think that's why President Obama came and issued that challenge to the students at MIT and I think to everybody in Massachusetts that green jobs and the environment is the new frontier, and we need to be the pioneers in developing the way we go forward on developing the energies and I think in this instance making sure that not only keeping the research and development here, but also the manufacturing and the other parts of it. Obviously, we learned these lessons painfully, that we try to move quickly, we put investments, and then we find they don't work so well. I think there are a lot of things that you can do at the federal level that provide tax incentives and credits. Congress is always using carrots and sticks for ways to accomplish things. And if what we want to do, particularly in Massachusetts, and I think we do, be the leader in the development of these technologies, but also make sure that both on the local level and with federal incentives, the businesses that come here can't take the federal money and then leave. And so you provide for both the strings piece, the sticks piece of the legislation, and you make sure that Massachusetts, and I believe the governor does want to with the Green Communities Act, be the pioneer in this, learn the lesson from that, provide incentives that will keep companies here. That, by the way, includes keeping energy costs down, keeping healthcare costs down. It should be part of a comprehensive way that we keep jobs here in Massachusetts.
Thank you, Alan Casey.
Quickly, the reason they're moving to China is that they're not sustainable. These companies are losing money. They're at risk of going out of business. So here's what I would do. First, we have to have fair trade agreements with China that have worker and environmental protections. Secondly, we need a clean energy institute. This would be like the National Institute for Health. Susan Hockfield, president of MIT, and others have endorsed this idea, where the federal government would have a pool of money that they would invest, but not be the lead investor. I think part of the problem here was the state tried to do it alone, and too much was at stake in state funds. It would do it in partnership, following private sector investment and venture capitalists and supporting entrepreneurs. That way you have a balanced system, you have a balanced approach, and then we're not stuck having put tons of money, government money, at risk. And so that's what I'm proposing.
Steve Pagliuca, please.
Well, the reason these companies have to leave is because other countries have invested in their infrastructure and have gotten down the curve faster. We have not invested in clean tech at all as much as we should have. And so we have to put together programs where companies will stay here for a finite period of time. We've got to get that in the agreements. But then there's got to be subsidies for manufacturing here until we can get down the curve. So you've got to phase it in, get subsidies. And there's some things we just can't do here, but we've got to find companies that will produce the product, get it to a certain stage, and use some labor on the outside. That's the only way it's going to be viable because they're going to lose money if we can't get down the curve.
Thank you, Steve Pagliuca. Michael Capuano.
These are very simple, and these jobs are not leaving for any other reason than any other job has left. Trade policy and tax policy. The American people have thought that trade policy into the last 20 years, they somehow thought that would save jobs. It didn't. It cost jobs because we don't have fair trade. every business by our trade policies and our tax policies is actually encouraged to form offshore, and I think it's insane. We've been trying for years to change that. I have to be honest. It's been good with President Obama. We haven't had any bad trade policies proposed yet, and if he does, I will vote no again.
Thank you so much. Sidney Lupkin, you are asking a question of Alan Casey, please.
Hi. Traveling along the same vein, I'm going to ask about the Electrification Coalition, which was launched in an effort to get more green electric cars on the road. Of the more than a dozen top executives who are part of this coalition is local A123 Systems, Inc., and what they're going to be asking the federal government is for more than $100 billion over the next 8 years. However, A123 completely tanked in the stock market yesterday. It was one of the worst performers. It reported losses of 6.75%. So the question for you is, where do we draw the line? How much is too much to invest in these companies?
Well, Sydney, as I said, I'm proposing a new Clean Energy Institute, which will be like the National Institute for Health, which would be a public-private partnership investing strategy so that it's balanced. We're actually following private sector leads where their money's just as much at risk as well as our taxpayer money. I'm also proposing in my climate change policy that we should have clean energy independence bonds, much like we had World War II victory bonds. Those bonds in World War II in today's dollars created $2 trillion. This is a way for every single citizen to say we want clean energy. We used to be leading in clean energy investment. We're down to $5 billion a year. China's spending tens of billions. India's spending tens of billions. This is a way for the American people to be big citizens and say we want clean energy, and then we can invest that through the Clean Energy Institute in a balanced way so that we're not at risk with overly government funding. So when these companies tank, we get the bill. And that's what I think we should do. And if I've got more time, I can go on.
You do.
Okay. I think that the challenge here is understanding the market and how the marketplace works. The government can't lead in this. It can support it. There's a four-stage process. The big challenge that these companies have is getting out of the pilot stage into the actual market stage because there's huge investment that it takes often to get these technologies developed and up and running. And I think with the Clean Energy Institute and with clean energy independence bonds, that's a solution. It gets all of us involved. It's a strategic way to do it. It's not just the government alone. And there is a burgeoning industry right here in Massachusetts that's ready to go if we support in a strategic way.
Thank you, Alan Casey. Steve Pagliuca, please.
The most successful economic development programs have been things like Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, which has created many, many jobs. And the fundamental premise is to marry private capital with opportunities to get public capital. So I would create an energy bank that would lend to these companies, create infrastructure that they can be in. But then the marketplace will decide. If we make it amenable for the marketplace to do these things, we will get more businesses here. We'll create something like Research Triangle Park for energy. So Energy Triangle Park in Massachusetts.
Thank you so much. Michael Capuano, please.
I think it's appropriate for the government to invest in basic research. I have concerns about applied research. Applied research is where you start making money, and that's what private money is for the most part. However, I do think government programs are more than appropriate on things like CAFE standards. We increase the CAFE standards. That makes it more economical for private money to be put into these things, not just for automobiles. I want to be clear. It's also building codes. We can get it more energy environment, more energy efficiency in our buildings and our homes. Policy does have a place, but taxpayer money invested in private enterprises, other than through the typical SBA loans and things like that, gets very dangerous. And I think you end up picking winners and losers, and more often than not, losers. The government's not a great investor.
Martha Coakley, please.
Just to follow up on that, I think for your particular question, one of the issues here is that batteries are just expensive. We'd love to be able to have clean batteries to run electric cars. We haven't been able to develop the technology to do it. So you come back to what government can and can't do. We can provide funds for research. We can encourage the scientific community to address these questions, which, is, again, I think when the president really laid that challenge down as this is the new frontier, we need to be pioneers on it. We know from knowing how scientific revolutions work that it's not always in a clear line, and we've got to be focused on it. But some of the answer will come from science, not from government.
Beth Daly, Steve Pagliuca is yours.
The climate bill currently that passed the House and pending in the Senate, contains incentives for both nuclear power and offshore drilling. And there's lots of talk and compromise from both sides of the aisle on this. Would you vote for the final bill if they remain in? If you vote no, how would you address climate change?
I vote no. I think nuclear power can stand on its own. It's a cost-effective source of capital. Boxer said it's part of the approach, and I think it has to be part of the approach. But there are issues in the environment that we haven't solved on nuclear power. So I would vote no on that. How do we solve this problem? Well, it's a big problem. We have 84% on fossil fuel right now. I would go the Waxman-Markey way. It reduced the emissions over time, take a 15-year period, reduce those emissions. We have to look at either cap and trade or carbon taxes and phase those in so they're fair. The system is working in Europe. We've got to be a part of the global system and get everybody on board to do this. If we just do it ourselves, we're going to be uncompetitive. So we've got to get everybody on board on a unified system so everybody's on the same playing field and the world has that goal.
So you're against nuclear power to address climate change? Is that?
No, what I'm saying is nuclear power is going to be part of the mix. I wouldn't subsidize it from a governmental perspective. I'd let private enterprise do it because it's competitive. So I would not subsidize nuclear power.
And how about offshore drilling? You didn't answer that.
Offshore drilling, I would not have offshore drilling. The whole key here is to end the dependence on oil. And so the more we drill offshore, the more we're going to use oil. We've got to go to alternative energy and really develop wind power, solar power, all those technologies, all those alternative technologies.
Thank you so much. Michael Capuano.
It depends what else is in the bill, whether I would vote for it. I mean, these bills are massive bills. The climate bill that I just voted for had a whole bunch of things in it that I don't like, starting off with cap and trade. I would prefer a straight-up carbon tax. But you know what? We had to get 218 votes. We had to make the deals to make progress. The House bill, in my opinion, is progress. It could be a lot better if you allowed me to write the bill myself and if I could get 218 votes. And it's the same thing here. We had to put nuclear power in the House bill, not because of what we wanted, but because we had to get enough votes, mostly out of the South in this particular case. The South and the Southeast were very adamant that nuclear power had to be in the bill or they would vote no. We had to throw things in there for coal and steel for the Midwest. And I'm not talking about right-wing Republicans. I'm talking about moderate Democrats who represent these areas. So the answer is I would have to see what's in the whole bill before I made a determination as to whether one issue or two issues would make me vote against the bill. Those two things, if my perfect world, the answer is no. But unfortunately, the last I heard, Washington is not the perfect world.
Martha Coakley, Michael Capuano took an extra couple of seconds. Feel free if you choose.
You know, we get about 30% of our power in New England from nuclear, and the four concerns I think we have are there's still a lot we don't know about nuclear safety, so we're concerned about the cost. I don't think we did a good job last time around because consumers ended up paying a lot of the cost for nuclear. We don't know what to do with the spent fuel rods, which is both an environmental and a health issue, and the safety issue, to make sure that we are going to protect those sites. And we have had difficulty, I think, since the 70s in ensuring all of those issues. So in that bill, I would look very, very closely at whether we would give extra money for one over another of alternative energies. I think nuclear can't be off the table, but I would focus on those four concerns.
And Alan, drilling? I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
And no on offshore drilling, mostly because of the environmental issues, and we need to develop other ways to get those alternative fuels.
Alan Casey?
If Senator Kerry and Senator Reid and President Obama say this is the best we can do, I will vote for it. I'm opposed to subsidizing nuclear industry. I'm opposed to offshore drilling, but we have to lead on climate change. The president's in China today announcing with President Hu Jintao that we're going to have a joint effort. But understand, this is in there because of the PACs and lobbyists. The lobbyists are spending $130 million from the big energy industries. I'm curious, Martha. I have a question for you. Do you think that the big oil company industry lobbyists that are raising money for your campaign and contributing to you will expect you to side with them or the citizens who want climate change?
Alan, if you want to finish your thought, and if Martha Coakley, if you want to respond, you are free to do that. Are you done with your thought?
Yeah, my thought is that this is in there because of the PACs and lobbyists. $130 million from the energy industry and $35 million from PACs. I'm not taking that money. So do you think they're going to expect you to side with them when the vote comes down or with the citizens?
Alan, as Attorney General, I've always disclosed where my money comes from, and I've always made my decisions based upon the merits of the issue.
Round two. Are we ready for this? I think we are. Sasha Pfeiffer, you have Steve. Is that true? Yeah, Steve Pagliuca. We're going just so that the same questioner does not ask the same recipient. So you have Steve Pagliuca, Sasha.
Exactly. So Massachusetts is part of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also known as REGI. Its goal is to cut the region's carbon pollution by about 10% or by 10% over about the next decade. But critics say that the goal that REGI has is much too modest. So what lessons have we learned so far from REGI as Congress debates a national cap-and-trade program that would be somewhat similar to what REGI is doing?
Well, the issue with REGI is it's only for a region, so it's not as effective. If you're doing it in a region, you have to spread it over the entire United States, number one.
Number two, there are companies that are struggling because of the costs of RGGI. And so in relating that to an overall program for cap and trade, you have to look at how to phase these in. Do you charge? Do you not charge? I think we should actually charge for cap and trade to make it more like a carbon tax, but charge for cap and trade. If you charge, it's a better economic system, but you've got to phase it in, and you've got to look at it industry by industry. If we kill off our industries to get there, we're not creating jobs. We're actually going to lose jobs. So any proposals have to be looked at in a phased-in way where business can react and have time to react. We've got to have strict proposals. We've got to have strict goals. This is a 50-year program, and we've got to put a stake in the ground today. Energy is a large battleship that we haven't addressed moving down the track. We're only at 84% today. We're at 16% alternative fuels today. We've got to set a goal to get there. We've got to do it over a 50-year period. You know, I like what Waxman Markey is doing in that direction.
Thank you very much, Michael Capuano. Well, actually, are we going to go? Yeah, I guess. Michael Capuano, go ahead.
Honestly, Sasha, I'm not sure I understand the question. I mean, I think the answer is that you have to shoot as high as you can get, but understand that you can't always get there. RGGI is a classic example because we can't control some of the emissions coming out of the Midwest that pollute us, at least not on a regional level. So I think the concept of setting goals is a good concept. I think they should be realistic. I also think they should be in ranges, and the range should be this is the lowest we'll accept, this is the highest we'd like to get, and this range is where we'd like to go. On the federal level, though, I also don't believe in negotiating against my own position, and that's something like CAFE standards. I don't start off by being reasonable about my desires for CAFE standards. I actually do my best to be as unreasonable as I can. Knowing full well that somebody else who is unreasonable on the other side will probably balance out the desire, which is where we end up all the time on every bill, including the climate bill that moved through the House.
Michael, I've got to hold you there if I can. You have a few extra seconds, Martha Coakley,
sure,
if you
just,
want it.
And to clarify the question, you know, as Steve said, RGGI is a work in progress. I guess I'm interested, knowing that we're only about a year in, what can we learn of anything so far?
Sure. Martha Coakley?
And, you know, we've been involved with the Massachusetts involvement in RGGI. We support it. We even though Governor Romney wanted to pull out of it, we think it was, as often the states are the good laboratories of different kinds of processes, we think that it has the appropriate incentives for businesses to get involved in. In particular, if we were going to go forward, I think we do have to have firm standards. I believe that we should have at least one-third of the incentives be given back to states for investing in efficiency, and you would work at the federal level and the state level to provide the incentives for the businesses to invest in green economies, but also for the states to invest in consumer efficiency, energy efficiency.
Alan Casey, same deal with you. If you want a couple extra seconds, you got
sure. RGGI's terrific. It's terrific leadership that our governor is having on this whole issue with clean energy. I understand why this happened regionally, because the Bush administration wouldn't take climate change seriously. They wouldn't listen to science instead of ideology. So regionally here, we had some good leadership to get this done. But the reason, I'm sorry to keep saying this, even in the Congressman Markey did a heroic job, but the PACs and the lobbyists and the special interests watered down the national standard from 20% reduction to 17%. And now it's stalled in the Senate, even with heroic leadership by Senator Kerry, because of these special interests. So the lesson I have is we got to get the special interests out, get the voice of the people in. But it's good that we're leading here regionally on this, finally, because Bush wouldn't do anything. And we got to strengthen as much as we can. But citizens have to say we need this, it's a crisis, and we got to get it done.
Thank you so much, Sidney Lupkin. You were asking a question of Alan Casey, please. Of course you can.
I'm curious. One thing about RGGI that was really unique was that we auctioned away a lot of the allowances. In the two bills right now in Congress, you're talking giving away, 70%, I can't recall. Where do you stand on that issue? Do you think you need to give away a certain amount to get buy-in from industry just to the political realities, or do you think you should auction 100% of them off?
Can we start with Michael Capuano? Quick answers down the line.
I would prefer not to have cap and trades. We wouldn't be in this debate. If you ask me what I want, I would rather have a straight-up carbon tax. And therefore, we avoid this altogether. Honestly, we gave them away, and I can't speak for Ed Markey and others, but I know that the reason they gave them away is because we had to get 218 votes. And I know that's a harsh reality, but without giving away to some of the industries I mentioned, to mostly, not entirely, but mostly Democrats who represent areas. Now, somebody may think it's a special interest, but I represent healthcare, high tech, universities. Yes, I defend their interests because they employ a lot of people here. They represent the social and the economic well-being of my district. Okay. Others represent steel industries and coal industries, and like it or not, they have an obligation to the people that elected them. And I don't like it. In a perfect world, no. I wish we had given none away.
Martha
but
Coakley.
It was necessary to get the votes to pass something.
Yeah, I think cap and trade is a good system. I think we needed a transition period, maybe not 70% given away, but I think in order to get buy-in, not just by other legislators, but by the industry and get this moving, that was the compromise there. And I think that it would be important still to give allowances to the states to make sure that we have energy efficiency included in that as we move towards the auctions.
Alan Casey.
I think Mike's right about the carbon tax, but the bill we have right now, as he knows, is cap and trade, and it's a massive giveaway. But I understand why. $130 million just last year in lobbying money and $35 million in special interest PAC money. These people are investing and they're getting a return. 70% giveaway is crazy. It's way out of control. So we have to get them out. You know, to get this bill through, we had to give all this stuff away because people are paying for lobbyists and PACs. So that's at the root of everything. We have to get them out and get the citizens in and fight. So, you know, if I get there, I'm going to fight from day one, take these allowances back and give them to the people where they belong.
Steve Pagliuca, please.
The Europeans pioneered the system. They started out with a total giveaway system, which didn't work out because industries that were way over just made profits and probably profits off the public. So I think 70% is a good compromise, so it's not a total giveaway. The goal here is reducing carbon emissions and doing it fairly. Carbon tax or cap and trade can do that. It's very complex trade-offs. It's all about pricing and how badly you hurt industry to get there. So 70% is a good number. That's going to get everybody signed up. That's going to get a bill passed. And we've got to get down the road on this, and you've got to make the realistic compromises to do that. And we've learned from the European experience. I also would favor probably doing cap and trade because eventually we have to be part of a global system, and that's the accepted system, you know, right now. If we go to carbon tax, it's going to be very hard to translate that in how we do it with Europe and how it works. So if we go to Kyoto and everybody's on the same page, we're going to get progress on global warming, and this is the way to do it.
Steve Pagliuca, thank you. Next, Sydney Lupkin, your question goes to Alan Casey, please.
Sure. Well, naturally, as the student panelist, I need to ask just a little bit further into the future. I'm sure someone's here for class and would like me to ask the following question, which is that green initiatives continually see delays, meaning that the burden is going to fall more or less on future generations to clean up the problem much more quickly than if we start now and work in smaller chunks, I guess. So how do we stop this, or are you for pushing it back a little bit with the economy and the situation that it's in?
I'm not for pushing it back. We need this. Actually, it's an economic issue. We can get through clean energy and green jobs, we can create millions of jobs that will help spur our economy, so we shouldn't push it back. In terms of your generation, you're absolutely right. You're the most at risk. You're at risk of growing up and your children, certainly, in a climate that's completely in crisis. But here's what we need to do. First of all of us as big citizens have to do more on our own responsibility to do energy efficiency. Just changing one light bulb, one from regular to a clean energy light bulb, is equivalent to taking 600,000 cars off the road. Secondly, you have to join a citizen movement. There's a big difference in this race. I'm the only person running on this panel who's been a movement leader. The only way we're going to get this done is if all of you as big citizens join with the environmental leadership for a new movement to say this is a crisis. We need it. Your generation has to lead. It's been young people that have always read on movements, whether it was civil rights, ending the wars, genocide today in Sudan. So we need a citizen movement. I've done that. I know how to build citizen movements. If I'm your senator, I'm going to work with you and all other citizens and environmental leaders. I'll bring them together and say, how do we work together to get the citizens to say this is important and stop the special interests in the PACs? I have a strategy for this. And your generation gets it. They do. They helped to start 350.org, Step It Up. They're already leading on this issue with Bill McKibben and others. So it can be done. It definitely can be done. But we got to raise the alarm bells.
Steve Pagliuca, please.
We now have 84% fossil fuels. We've got to pick a point out 50 years from now and get that number down. I like the Waxman-Markey number of 40% emissions. I like to get 50%. We've got to set that goal. We've got to start on that goal now. We can't wait until it's a crisis for your generation. And there are really four ways to do that. One is efficiency. This 100 quadrillion BTUs of energy, it's estimated 25 to 30% is lack of efficiency. There are companies here in Massachusetts like Enernoc that are attacking that issue. There are companies that attack it with technologies for light bulbs, technologies for solar power. So we've got to attack it with efficiency, education, go to renewable sources, and that's the way to get it done. And we've got to start now. We've got to set this goal out here and start now.
Mike Capuano.
I'm not for waiting for anything. I'm not for waiting to clean up the environment. I'm not for waiting to getting our troops out of Iraq. I'm not for waiting for anything. At the same time, my job is to do as best I can to push the ball as far down the field as I can. And if I get there, great. If I don't get there, your job to pick up where we left off and keep pushing the ball. We started the environmental movement in my generation. We're not even close to finishing it. We're just at the beginning of it, is my fear. I'm hoping we're near the end, but I think we're still at the beginning. So though I hate the concept, I know that the reality is whatever we do, you're still going to have to pick up where we finish on this and 1,000 other issues and keep moving forward. We're moving forward on the environment, on civil liberties, on human rights. You're going to have to do more because hopefully the world will be a better place when you inherit it.
Martha Coakley.
Sydney, we thanks for that question, because we are behind. We should have started yesterday, and we didn't. We began that one in our generation, and I think we dropped the ball. As we saw fuel prices go up in the 70s, we became very conscious. We started Earth Day, and then the 80s happened, and all of a sudden everybody's driving huge cars, and we don't care anymore about the environment, and that was a huge mistake. The big mistake is that people will not take climate change seriously, and I'm concerned statistics show that people are backburning it. We cannot wait on this. We need every minute now to use our technology, to use your generation to get some solutions. So yesterday is too late, and we need to keep working on it.
Before Beth Daly asks the next question of Martha Coakley, Martha Coakley just said everybody's driving huge cars. Very quickly down the line, what car do you use for your personal vehicle purposes, Mike Capuano?
Ford Escape.
Martha Coakley.
I also have a Ford Escape.
Woo. Alan Casey.
I've got a 15-year-old Toyota Corolla wagon.
And Steve Pagliuca.
Got a hybrid Lexus and a 10-year-old Lexus that will be replaced soon, hopefully.
Beth Daly for Martha Coakley, please.
Well, I'm sort of following on the same vein, and I want to hear a little bit about your personal side. So tell me your greenest personal habit and how it's going to help the environment and how it is today.
That's for you, Martha.
We've made a real effort in our campaign to be green. I want to say that we recycle. We use a lot more email than paper, consciously so. We use the paper we do use is recycled, and we work with our landlord to make sure that we cut down on water bottles, and we use tap water. I recycle. I never used to, I'll be honest with you, until the last 10, 15 years, but I do in Medford recycle. I'm very conscious of I actually put a composter in my backyard this year. And so I am much more conscious, I think. Part of my work as Attorney General, but also having grown up and living now in the Mystic River watershed, how fragile our atmospherics are, and that it does take everybody to start to get in the frame of mind that those clamshell packages and all the crazy stuff that take so much energy are not biodegradable or really we're going to pay for a long time.
Alan Casey, please.
The most important thing we do in my house is listen to my 7-year-old daughter. she tells us what to do. We recycle. We try to be energy efficient, you know, at turning the lights off, et cetera. And, you know, in terms of the campaign, we're totally carbon neutral. We've brought offsets. We recycle in the campaign. I do have a hybrid car for the campaign. I've got an old car that I haven't upgraded yet. So we try to do what we can, and I think it's important. The other thing is, in terms of what I've done, is City Year, as one of our first projects, helped to start the recycling program in Boston. We piloted it, and we met with then-Mayor Flynn. He said he wanted to start a recycling program. We said, we have the people that can help you do it. We piloted it in JP. It was so successful that it's now been going for 20 years in Boston.
Alan, thank you. Steve Pagliuca, please.
Well, we recycle, and we compost. And the nice thing about the compost is I went out to the compost pile the other day, and there was a giant beanstalk with 12 pumpkins on it. So we actually have renewable composting, I guess. So it's a new technology. We have radiant heat, which is much more efficient. We are trying to be paperless in our campaign, and we do the plastic recycling and everything you possibly can do. I think it's important also to support businesses like Enernoc that will take energy off the grid, smart grids, and all these technologies beyond. And I also think it's very important to talk about education. When we grew up, we were not educated on this. Alan's right. It's our kids, my son, my daughters. They understand this. We've got to understand this and implement it because education is critical.
Michael Capuano.
Well, pretty much everything I can do within reason, been recycling for years, but the truth is I'm thinking about it. Based on what I've done to clean up the environment, I actually think I could probably drive around in a Humvee for the rest of my life and still be on the positive side of having cleaned up the environment. Everything, light bulbs, recycling, setback thermometers, everything I can think of in the normal course of events. I still have some of the most inefficient heating boilers in my home you can possibly have. Not because I like it, but because I haven't got the $30,000 it's going to take to fix it. We'll get to it when we get to it. So there's still plenty of things we can do, tons of things we can do, but we're doing what we can and very proud of it. And by the way, I don't have a campaign car. I have a personal car, and I loaded up with people. I came over here with four people. So that counts, doesn't it?
Sasha Pfeiffer, you're talking to Michael Capuano.
So I want to ask a casino question that has nothing to do with gambling, which is that Foxwoods is despised by many environmentalists because it was built in a remote area that required an extensive amount of infrastructure, including new roads that carry about 40,000 cars a day. It's basically the antithesis of what you would call smart growth. So if so-called destination casinos come to Massachusetts, whether you support gambling or not, what would you do about the massive environmental impact they can have?
Well, first of all, again, I talked earlier about building codes. I think building codes are an important thing that states and locals and cities and towns can and should do. And second of all, I am not casinos, you're right, it's a different question, but if they have them, I'm not for destination casinos in the middle of nowhere. I actually think that if we're going to have casinos, that they should have them in places that are already developed for the very reasons you just mentioned. Also, as far as I'm concerned, they should be attracting people who are already here as opposed to dragging them out someplace where they shouldn't be. So I actually really believe that it's mostly through building codes, both local and state codes, that are the best way to do it.
Martha Coakley.
I would hope that as we go forward on any new development in Massachusetts, including whether casinos is on the horizon or not, and certainly that is another issue that the legislature should look at in terms of the cost, environmental impact, as I've brought up, the cost of regulatory and other enforcement issues around casinos. But that issue of smart growth, I think the governor is in favor of, and I think it's really important that Massachusetts have it for any new projects, including casino gambling. And I think the federal government has to work to provide incentives around these issues, particularly in some states where they seem to have more open land than we do, to make sure that we preserve it properly and conserve it.
Thank you. Alan Casey, please.
This is just one of the many reasons why I oppose casinos in Massachusetts, because it is to have devastating environmental impact. It also raises $3 in social welfare costs for every dollar we get. The jobs aren't good. They're only $6.34 an hour. It's going to fundamentally change the character of our state. And here's the problem on the environmental issue. The casino industry is one of the only industries nationally that isn't regulated nationally. If I'm your next senator, I'm going to introduce legislation to have a National Casino Gambling Regulatory Commission, and then we could apply federal environmental standards. So just like we're stopping Cape Wind, we could actually use the federal environmental law to stop the development of this incredibly devastating resort casinos. But the $250 million comes from the gambling industry over 10 years to stop any federal oversight. And that's just one of the many reasons why I'm opposed. I'm the only candidate that's opposed to casinos here.
Alan, thank you so much. Steve Pagliuca, please.
If this is an environmental question, if it's a casino question, I reluctantly support casinos with the job creation. I build them in mixed use, try to minimize the environmental damage, build them in areas that have towns and roads already, and really make sure it's mixed use, so it's hotels, eateries, retail shops, and minimize the gambling aspect of it. The studies show it's going to create 7,000 jobs. You can drive an hour and a half to these places and gamble. We'd rather have it here in Massachusetts if we're going to have it, but do it mixed use and do it environmentally soundly.
Thank you very much. Sydney Lupkin, next question is for Martha Coakley.
Many environmentalists are of the opinion that environmental violations from the EPA and Mass DEP are regarded by the violators as really nothing more than parking tickets. How do we do a better job of discouraging bad behavior?
Well, good question. And one of the things I mentioned in my opening was that we took this very seriously in our Attorney General's office and still do. We reinvigorated our environmental crime strike force to make sure that we would be aggressive on those violations, large and small, that we would move to investigation, seek civil penalties if appropriate, and we've done that when trees have been stripped, when people have been doing illegal dumping on asbestos clearance. But we also have gone after those who intentionally, because they've done it before and they know they can get away with it, or broken the law. And I was pleased to appoint Andy Rayner as my head of that. He has a criminal background and an environmental background. And we have targeted those who would be the worst offenders for criminal violations. And I think that, like in many areas, when you send a message out in Massachusetts, as we have, that if you pollute, if you strip the environment, if you are doing illegal dumping, you will pay a cost for it, then hopefully they change their behavior. And if they don't, they face fines that are appropriate, that are deterrent, or criminal sanctions that in terms of corporations or dollars, but can expose individuals to criminal liability and jail.
Alan Casey.
We have to do a better job of discouraging this by higher fees, greater penalties, stronger enforcement. The other thing we need to do is use citizen power. We have to be transparent. We got to take all this, put it on the internet. We have to publicize it. Newspapers should print, you know, who's violating and how much they're violating, and then citizens have to demand change. There are some companies that are becoming green companies. We need to reward them with our dollars. If we find out that there are companies that are polluting, we need to say, we're not going to spend our money on your products. We're not going to support your companies. And then they will change because they respond to the market. So it's better government enforcement as well as citizen power.
Steve Pagliuca.
I think for the small violations, you know, you have to beef up the DEP. You know when you stop small crimes in cities, you know, the large crimes stop as well. There's an impact there. So beef up enforcement and resources for that. Higher penalties, economic penalties, and then criminal penalties if that doesn't work. So it's really a whole system that starts at the bottom and then goes all the way up to the top to the large polluters, but it's got to be enforced all the way up and down.
Michael Capuano.
Prioritization and publication. You prioritize the enforcement actions you take, and you make sure they get as publicized as they can. And you don't sit around waiting for somebody else to do your job. When I was mayor, we created our own environmental strike force because the district attorney, the attorney general in the state wouldn't do it at the time, and we prosecuted our own people. And we stopped illegal dumping in Somerville. We stopped dumping into the Mystic River. At the same time, we didn't have the authority or the ability to determine what was on the riverbed of the Mystic River, which is incredibly environmentally polluted. You have to prioritize at different levels, and you have to make sure that when you go after somebody that it sticks. You don't have to go after everybody, because the truth is enforcement is the last line of defense. The first line of defense is prevention.
We're reaching the closing statement portion. It's Casey, Pagliuca, Coakley, and Capuano. Again, they drew lots. Alan Casey, 60 seconds, please.
Sure. In short answers here, you can't explain everything. I put out a comprehensive clean energy plan on my website today that deals with clean energy, a new clean energy institute, as I said, clean energy independence bonds, moving from fossil fuels to renewables, et cetera. But here's the big issue. I am the only movement leader on this stage. I'm the only person who understands how to build a movement. As we've discussed today, this is a crisis, but you all have to get involved and other citizens. We need a citizen movement to say that climate change is a crisis. We want stronger environmental standards. We want stronger enforcement. We want stronger fines. We have to get the oil and gas industry and the big energy industries out and get the voice of the people in. I know how to do that. That's what I've done my whole life. If I'm your senator, I'm not taking any of that money because I want to be able to be a reformer. I want to work with you and other environmentalists around this state and around this country. If we can do that, we actually can get the climate change legislation. We can protect our air and water that we drink and breathe, and we can have a much better environment for our children and our grandchildren. So I ask for your hearts. I ask for your hands. I ask for your vote. Join me in a cause to reclaim our environment for our state, our country, and the world. Thank you.
Steve Pagliuca, please.
I got into this race because we're facing several crises in America, and they're going to affect our children. The environment's one of them. The job crisis is another that's affecting everybody right now, and the healthcare crisis. My record has been solving problems on the ground, job by job, business by business. I've been trained to solve those problems and been very successful, whether it be social problems. I've worked with the MSPCC for 10 years now, trying to stamp out abuse in Massachusetts. I've tried to get the Boston Celtics a championship. We've got one, and hopefully we'll get another one, and been successful building many, many businesses from the ground up. And it's got to be done from the ground up on a detailed level. We've got to do it for our children. We built a deficit of $12.1 trillion now, which is growing at $1 trillion a year. It took us 200 years to get to $1 trillion. In 1982, there was a large outcry that we got to $1 trillion. Now we're at $13 trillion. So we've got many, many challenges. Massachusetts is the greatest state in the nation. We've got the right people to do that. If we work together, we can do it. If we create the support systems, we will create jobs, and that'll help solve the problems, that'll help solve the environment. We can do it all together, clean tech, high tech. I appreciate your vote. I know I can do it. I've had 25 years on the ground of trying to build these businesses and trying to help the country.
Thank you, Steve Pagliuca. Martha Coakley, please.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks for everyone who's hosting this day, not just for you, but all the groups that are here, because this issue is such a high priority and should be and has to stay front and center. I had the great opportunity to grow up in Berkshire County in a really Terrific part of the state where, frankly, our natural resources are sometimes our best resource. I went to college out there, and my first experience in Washington was in 1974 working with Silvio Conti. And my first thing that I wrote was about how he was cleaning up the Housatonic River from the PCBs, the polychlorinated biphenyls, that were in the river and had kept the salmon growth down. Since that time, I've had the opportunity to go through, as many of you have, the 70s into the 80s, and now understanding that climate change is real. It's got to be a priority. It can't be overstated. It's got to be stated clearly. I've spent time as an attorney general getting educated on these issues and understanding what the issues are. We didn't talk much about water today, but that's a huge issue. Air is a huge issue. Understanding the science behind them and what we need to do at an agency level and at a federal level, if you send me to Washington and I'm asking for your vote today, I will work with all of you to keep these issues front and center because we can do no less. Thanks, Sydney, for your questions.
Thank you, Martha Coakley. And Michael Capuano, please.
First of all, I want to thank everybody here for helping me in the last 11 years understand and work on many of these environmental issues. I don't know them all yet, the ocean acidification, but I'll figure it out. But it's important for people in this room to be active to educate us. We can't know all these issues, and we can't understand we can't possibly be on top of all these things. But I can tell you one thing, that if you don't have somebody in Washington who is, number one, your friend, number two, working with you to try to figure out these issues and how they impact real people in a real way, helping you translate your desires, your goals for this environment, our goals for this environment. If you don't have somebody in Washington willing to do that and capable of doing that, you're doomed to failure. And for me, failure is just not an option. And it's not an option in a philosophical way. It's not an option in a political way. We talked about the climate bill. The climate bill that we have is barely good enough, the one that came through the House. And I know that we may have to accept something that's a half a loaf. But it also means we have to get back to the table the very next day, understanding the realities of this world, understanding the limitations, and get back to work, taking the next step, and the next step, and the next step. This is too important to give up just one shot at it. It's too important to leave it at 50-second sound bites. We need to keep working on this thing. We have to do it in a realistic way, the way Washington works.
Thank you, Michael Capuano. Now is your opportunity to thank the four candidates.
This is Boston University's World of Ideas. You've just heard a forum on the environment and a new green economy featuring the four Massachusetts Democratic candidates running for the U.S. Senate seat of the late Ted Kennedy. The forum was co-sponsored by the Environmental League of Massachusetts, the Conservation Law Foundation, Mass Audubon, the Appalachian Mountain Club, Sierra Club Massachusetts Chapter, Clean Water Action, Environment Mass, the Trustees of Reservations, and the Mass League of Environmental Voters. Tonight's moderator was New England Cable News host Jim Browdy. For a CD of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 1-800-909-9287. You may also go to our website, wbur.org, to hear archived editions of this and all other WBUR programs. Tonight's program was produced by Mike Toda and Michael Garth with help from Jared Mooney and Edward Mazulis. The executive producer for Boston University's World of Ideas is Peter Lydodes. I'm Deborah Becker. Thanks for joining us.